This is Rage, Radio Against Global Ecocide. Today on the show, part two of the Fertile Ground interview. In this show, I put together Cameron, Dylan, and Max's thoughts on community. We'll have music by David Rovix and Resident Antihero. This is Rage, building a community of resistance one podcast at a time. Coming to you from occupied Amiskwasi, Wisconsin.
Our primary emergency is stopping the world from being murdered so that life can survive in the future. To get there, to realize that goal, we've understood that we're going to need community and all that that means. The support, the different resources that come from community rather than being an individual.
When Fertile Ground began, its name was Fertile Ground Community, and that's still our official name, although we go by Fertile Ground. And I think it's rather apt in that this group is a focal point for radical environmental organizing in Bellingham and in the larger area. And it's a focal point for people who are interested in these theories and people who care about the natural world, people who are critiquing the general society at large. I think that's been one of our biggest strengths, is the community. If I had gone into this work alone, I would not still be here today. The problems that we're facing are so daunting and so large that they can't be faced alone. And our strength lies in our ability to organize collectively. That's what Fertile Ground has done. It's been a place for that organization to happen.
Looking back throughout history, I don't think you can find many examples of voluntary social change by any minority or oppressed group in which community was not involved. We can look at the left, or what we're calling the left here today, and see that a lot of the reasons that we're not able to effectively engage in politics is because of the lack of community. And on the other side, one of the reasons that the right is still able to engage so much and they're able to mobilize such large groups is through what remains of community. And for example, they still have a communal institution, so the church. All right, you know, imagine if progressives, or I know there's the Unitarian Church, but imagine if progressives in general spent every Sunday morning listening to moral sermons, and through that as well. I mean, that's a direct access to political engagement right there. Activism and social change, these aren't things that we do on the weekend or that you attend to for 2 hours on a Friday night. You know, these are ways of life. If activism and social change aren't part of the general space that you live in and the air you breathe, I don't think you're going to make much change.
We live in a society that's based on competition and based on individualism, and that's something that's drilled into us from birth. You go to school and you compete with your classmates for test scores. You got on the playground and you compete to win the games. And then you go home and you play video games and you compete to win with your siblings. And then you go back and you repeat, and the cycle continues throughout your entire life in this culture. And that individualism has really taken root, deep root in this culture. And I think it's made it really difficult for people to organize collectively. It's given people a lot of mental blocks about associating with new people, or trying new ideas, about forming groups and taking collective action. And this is something that you really didn't see in previous generations. And I think that's one of the reasons why 100 years ago, the labor movement was powerful and it was sweeping the country, and now we have nothing of that sort.
When we talk about making community, it is very daunting because if we look at the culture at large, the general flow, the current of the culture is just pushing us in the opposite direction, ever towards more individual ways of life. The same is true with our technologies. I'm not going to say that, talk about the iPod. People commonly bring up the iPod and say we're all walking around with our little earplugs in, but I don't really think this is the best critique because it's not like before iPods were around, we were all communal beings and the iPods intervened, but still we can look at these technologies and see the directions that they're pushing us in. And the same is true with computers, the fact that, you know, now most households have, well, most affluent households in first world nations have multiple computers. You know, it's not even, I mean, the computer isn't even a family process, not that it ever was in the first place.
I think one of our biggest goals in the deep green movement, in the environmental movement, has to be creating community and building a strong community, a community that embraces resistance, embraces a diversity of tactics, and really understands the severity of the situation that we're in. I think it's going to be a really difficult process, but at the same time, it's a process that builds on itself and that grows. And that's something that we've seen here in Bellingham. You know, we started out with two or three people who were interested in these ideas, organizing around them. And now there are at least three organizations who hold similar ideas about ecology and radical environmentalism, and probably have a membership, a solid membership of at least 20. And there are hundreds and thousands of people in the community who've heard our message and who've agreed with us. And we've spoken at dozens of events and been interviewed multiple times. And we're really managing to spread this radical political analysis through the community. And so when you build that community, you can be extremely effective. And it's a self-reinforcing process.
Some thoughts on having watched other community groups. In Bellingham, Washington, there's a strong presence of the Transition Town movement, what we call here Transition Whatcom. And we've done work similar to them or paralleled them. And they do a lot of very good work raising awareness about peak oil and right now our energy dependence. When I first saw Transition Whatcom coming up, I thought I had the typical little bit of annoyance that I think most radicals have with the Transition Town movement not being radical enough. And I thought, oh, you know, they're going to get this huge following and then we're going to have to listen to the transition, you know, the whole Transition Town community always writing us about, you know, the debate between violence and nonviolence and whatnot. But what's interesting for me to see is that even they've had trouble getting people out and they've had trouble building community. And so I think I took it for granted. I just thought it would be a given that they would successfully be able to. And I don't think it's their fault or that they've done something wrong at all. But again, the current of the culture.
I think there are really two conflicting visions. And one is kind of a utopian vision. And that is that our communities will be entirely non-oppressive, very diverse in their memberships and in their beliefs, but organizing collectively around the same issue, around environmentalism. And the other vision, the vision that I think is somewhat more realistic, is that communities of resistance are historically composed of thieves, robbers, and generally people who aren't that nice. And I think that's something that we're going to see more and more, is that in order to build a successful resistance movement, we need to learn how to organize underground. And the people who know how to organize underground are drug dealers and criminals and people who've been doing it for hundreds of years. And at the same time, I think that it's very important that the above ground communities stick to these ideals of a non-oppressive politics.
think that is also another one of the most important questions we can be asking right now. And I don't have any answer other than just adding to the list of questions. I cannot imagine what building a left progressive community would look like. Of course, I want it to happen. I really do. I just cannot imagine what that would look like, what kind of institutions, if it would be centered around institutions, if it would be modeled off of the commune type base. I really don't know. A lot of American social scientists and political scientists have talked about the internet as playing a special role in allowing community formation or public space for progressive dialogue. I'm a lot more skeptical about this, and I think any of us that have engaged in forums can say, yeah, you know, you can have beneficial interactions, you can meet people on there, but it's no adequate substitute for an actual community. And I think the emotional ties there, although they can be strong, are again nowhere near a real face-to-face interaction.
Now, I can speak to the Fertile Ground community and how it formed and sort of the trajectory that we've taken to get where we are. So about 2 years ago, Fertile Ground didn't exist. And it was really formed when one of our members saw Derek Jensen and decided to do something about it. And so he got in touch with Cameron and Dylan, and they organized a meeting. They recruited some new members, and I became involved about 6 or 8 months after that, when Fertile Ground first became public as an organization. They hosted Derek Jensen to speak again in Bellingham, and they invited the public to come to Fertile Ground meetings and to engage in a dialogue about how we're going to address these issues. And so when the group started, a lot of people came to the meetings. They were very well attended, and that dropped off really quick. I think that was in some ways a good thing, because we found out who was dedicated and who really wanted to be a part of this. And that core group that stayed, that stuck around for those meetings, those are the people who are still involved today. Those are the people who are the core of our organizing. I think one of the crucial things is that while we are activists, it's very important that we make time to have a good time together and to actually make friends with each other and to really engage with each other. You know, one of the things that's great about Fertile Ground is that we joke around with each other a lot and we have a lot of fun and we get a lot of work done too. At the same time, you know, we've got our own brand of gallows humor. Maybe you could call it collapse humor, because we're dealing with some pretty terrifying and, you know, this stuff, it's not the lightest subject matter. And so we've had to come up with our own set of jokes and our own way of making light of this situation just so that we can get through it. And, you know, I think that process of making friends, of developing a community, of developing a language and a discourse around whatever the problems are that you're trying to solve, you know, that's really what brings people together and cements those friendships. You know, and that's something that we've developed here, and I think it's going to take us really far, because no matter what happens with our organization, we know that we will always be friends and we will always be working on these issues. And so once you have those two things established, then it's just a matter of what are you going to do, and that's just a technical problem.
With friendship comes accountability.
Our time as activists in building that community, it's really been a pleasure and a joy to realize just what that means. Community is really everything, and I don't think that if resistance or deindustrialization works, it is not going to be without community. People doing different things, and yet also people you can fall back on to support you and help you out when needed. How do I see community in the future? I think if we're to survive, we're going to have community. But at the same time, civilization itself is what is destroying communities. everything from computers that keep us in our homes on Facebook and not next door talking to our neighbors, to death squads going into different countries and literally wiping out communities of indigenous people. On all fronts, civilization destroys community. So at the same time that we build community within civilization, we need to fight civilization to help build the community. Those are my thoughts.
Standing here on a highway turned into a lake, born on this planet that I didn't make. The ice caps are melting, you can measure the rise of the poisoned oceans, hear all the lies of the political pundits and corporate crooks, their accountants and scientists cooking the books with hardly an inkling of what it's about. Wedded to profit and flooding in drought, I'm talking to you from here at the end of the world. Here on the bayou, amidst mountains of soil, washed up farmland covered in oil, 1 ton every acre, lost every year, and along with the pesticides, it ends up right here. Millions of miles of chemical wheat, challenging all to try to compete and lay waste to your country like we've done to ours. Let them eat coffee, sugar, coca, and flowers. I'm talking to you from here at the end of the world. Here in the city, shrouded in smoke, 10 million people this morning awoke to a future of cancer, industrial disease. So let's build some more suburbs and buy SUVs. Cut down the mountains, burn all the coal, and put all the money in a humongous bowl. They'll call it progress and they'll blame it on you to end life as we know it, to enrich the few. I'm talking to you from here at the end of the world. As I speak to you now from an occupied place, you might call it your home or a terrorist base. They'll send your sons and your daughters to make sure that it's theirs, while they sit in their mansions in plush leather chairs. And everyone's waiting for us to decide. In dust we were born, and in dust we reside. Will we realize the commons is to shepherd and share? Here in this war zone called land, water, and air, I'm talking to you from here at the end of the world. I'm talking to you from here at the end of the world.
That was David Rovox with Here at the End of the World. I want to thank Dylan, Cameron, and Max for their great insights that they've shared with us. Instead of my usual dialogue, Max will take us out with a reading of his poem, Rain, followed by Resident Antihero with Cascadian Death Turtle Tramples Capitalism. Remember, folks, the resistance needs you.
Rain is soaking into the soil and into our skin. Deep red, the soil mourns spilled blood. Young trees stand at watch over the stumps of their elders. The trees are weeping. Look closely, the water seeping down trunks, filtering through moss and lichen and fern blades. Great violence was done here. No longer do we see marbled murrelets. No red tree voles high in the canopy. No wolves or elk, bear or cougar or beaver. No spotted owls. No cedars or hemlock or fir scraping at the sky. Each drop of rain is full of sadness, gathering in the soil, staining it red.